Most poignant hymn. And the title of our next discourse by Brother Lenny Grice is the title of the hymn, Resurrection Morn. And it's a beautiful thought when we think about reversing the crying and the sadness that the world has had with joy of the resurrection. Brother Len.
Well, brethren, it is. It's up to you. You know, what I was going to say after that last discourse, Brother Tom talked about incarceration. If you were in North Korea this last week, and you were sitting in a meeting with Kim and Young, and you fell asleep, he took you out and had you executed. So I'm just saying, I know it's after lunch, and you may be tired. And the lights make it worse, so. Don't worry, brethren. That's not our way, certainly. I want to bring some love to you that I didn't get a chance to do yesterday. The International Convention of Bible Students, which met in Poland in August, we had 1,301 gathered there in Stuart, Poland. And they voted to send love to all the conventions and classes here. So we bring you that love. Also, I bring you love from our Wednesday night Friends of Jehovah Witnesses study. There's about eight that meet on that study, and they always want to send their love amidst their own struggles and trying to digest the truth with some of the things they have. They appreciate the brethren especially and the commitment they have. So love sent there. Also bring love from the Delaware Valley Bible students, where we meet part of the year. And this is Delaware Valley Bible students. Other than one in the middle there, you see Sister Ruth Eldridge. Just about a year ago, Sister Ruth moved to the retirement center. So, in accordance with Scripture, we can mourn for her for a year. And so that year is about up. I'm going to have to get a Photoshop her out of the picture here soon. Also, love from our family. Gretchen and I are here, but Rachel is attending the New York convention this weekend, and she sends love. Aaron was online yesterday, at least after he got out of work, and he sends his greetings as well. And lastly, but certainly not least, I want to bring you the love from the Phoenix Associated Bible Students, with whom we meet 6 months out of the year. Phoenix is a real example of being able to project the Lord's desire for reconciliation amongst the brethren. There were two classes in Phoenix for many, many years. After 2 years of intense work, the classes came together and formed one class called the Phoenix Associated Bible Students. There are about 40 of us that meet there. And there's a convention there in over the Martin Luther King holiday. It'll be in January. If you're out that way, it's a wonderful time of year to be in Phoenix. And the brethren there send their love, as well as one of the members of that class, Brother Kent Humphreys, and I think Debbie knows the one guy up there, right? Brother Ron Chastain, who's married to her sister. Brethren, if I show you this picture, what comes to your mind? What do you think this is about? Mother was at a funeral, right? This picture appeared in our paper, one of our papers in Philadelphia, a local paper. I was so moved by this picture that it stirred me to want to give a talk regarding the grief that this person must have felt. You can see the grief on her face. Her husband consoling her, yes, her son had been killed in the war. A young man about in his 20s, coming back, and all she had left of him was that flag to remember. And it spurred me to think what a great promise we have that very few have. And that's the hope of a resurrection where truly we will be reunited and others will be reunited with those loved ones. And that's what I want to spend the time today on, that promise of the resurrection of the dead. What do people generally believe? Well, as you see depicted here, most common Christian belief is that when someone dies, either their souls at death or their consciousness in the form of soul goes somewhere else. And for some Christians, it's either heaven or hell. For others, it's a migration to another place. But that consciousness continues afterwards. And whatever it is, departs the body. Death, I think, is one of the most misunderstood subjects. Just what it is and what happens afterwards. We know everyone wonders about it. There's fear. Some people have great uncertainty. I know some believe this is all there is. Romans had an epitaph that says, I was not, I am, I shall not be. Really a pitiful one, isn't it? That's the hopelessness that even some have. Some believe that the deceased aren't dead at all. They go to some better place. But that in that place they're doing exactly the same thing. Those that can't read it, this is Steve Jobs appearing at what is generally called St. Peter at the Pearly Gates, and he's looking up in his book of life and he says, I have an app for that. Well, it also means that, what do people say? What do you commonly hear at funerals or things? He's teaching St. Peter how to fish. Well, I think Peter was a pretty good fisherman. I don't think he needs to do that. God must have needed a good plumber. Okay? Or he's probably now playing around with Payne Stewart. Payne Stewart was a great golfer that died in a plane crash. That's the sort of thing you generally hear. They're gone doing the same thing they always did, only now in some different place. But the Scriptures do give us an answer. And it's one that we all hold very dear. Ecclesiastes 12:7 says, Then shall the dust return to the earth as it was, and the spirit shall return unto God who gave it. James 2:26, James says, The body without the spirit, and that's the word pneuma, breath, is dead. Ecclesiastes goes on to say in chapter 9, verses 5, 6, and 10, The living know that they shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have they any more a reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Also their love, their hatred, their envy is now perished, neither have they any more a portion forever in anything that is done under the sun. Solomon summed it up well in that iteration. Psalm 115:17, David says, The dead praise not the Lord. In fact, David, in his petition to be saved from death, when he was surrounded by his enemies, he gives us that petition in Psalm 88. There he says in verses 3 to 5, For my soul has had enough troubles. My life is drawn near to Sheol, the word for hell. I am reckoned among those who go down to the pit, forsaken among the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, and they are cut off from your hand. Explicit statements. We know that the dead are dead. There is no consciousness after that death. Verses 10 and 11 in that chapter, David says, Wilt thou show wonders to the dead? Shall the dead arise and praise thee? Selah. Shall thy loving kindness be declared in the grave, or thy faithfulness in destruction? No, at death, as we learn from these scriptures and others, the body returns to dust, and that spirit or breath returns to God. Now, there are many, many illustrations that we have used as Bible students to illustrate this, and others that believe in the sleep of the soul. I like the picture of the light bulb. Two things must be combined for life, as we're told in the Scripture, the body and the breath, as Genesis tells us, that God breathed into man, into his body, and man became a living being. So when you turn off that light, where did the light go? That light just ceased to exist. The light ceases to exist when that switch is turned off and the bulb is not lit. It's as simple as that. It's the way the Scriptures picture it. Yet the complexity introduced by so many creates confusion. Paul dealt with this in Acts, the 17th chapter. It says, "Then certain philosophers of the Epicureans and some of the Stoics encountered him," or Paul. "And some said, 'What will this babbler say?' Others, 'He seemeth to be a setter forth of strange gods, because he preached unto them Jesus and the resurrection.'" Now, that was the resurrection of Jesus, but also includes the idea of a resurrection. Brethren, life from the dead is the ultimate work of the ransom. That is what we're striving for. The hope of the world, and a world where they can be restored and welcomed back, as we heard before, into the fellowship of God. The resurrection of the dead, it's the very heart of our message. We shouldn't forget that. The hope that we provide by that resurrection, the reuniting of that mother with her son in the resurrection, and that picture when that happens. Now, I've been reading Brother Gene Burns' series of books, and if you haven't read it, it's worthwhile to read. The picturing in your mind the stories he creates of the resurrection and the work of that resurrection. But it really is the heart of the message we have, and I'm so glad that Brother Gene put those books together, because it showed me that he felt that intense passion for the resurrection that we should feel as well. The awakening from the dead that Jesus had in his day were previews. Previews of what the ultimate work should be or will be in that time of resurrection. The very heart of redemption is an awakening. An awakening from the sleep of death for every member of the human race. And it really is a first opportunity to arise from weakness, the degradation that's been associated with Adamic death will no longer impact. So it truly is a first chance, a first opportunity, a chance to ultimately get to that point of perfection of life and a preparation for all eternity. When we look at the ministry of Jesus himself, we find only a few awakenings from death. But I think when we look at those awakenings from death were the greatest of Jesus' miracles. Can you imagine being there and seeing someone risen from the dead? None of us here have ever seen anyone raised from the dead. You think about those that were in Jesus' day, and yet still they doubted Jesus' power. But that gives us, I think, for our benefit, a preview, the comprehensiveness of this work of restitution that will go on. Before that can even start, we've got to raise those dead. Paul said in Philippians 3:10-11, his purpose in life was that I may know him and the power of his resurrection, fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death, if by any means I may attain to the resurrection from the dead. Brother Conrad Jarello gave a beautiful talk yesterday around Jesus' death and the importance, and that is something we should treasure and always remember, the pain and suffering he went through. Brother George Eldridge, who was an elder in this class at one time, George used to always say, he said, the problem with most Christians is all they ever see is Jesus on the cross. They never go around to the backside to see the resurrection. Because that was the ultimate purpose of his death, to be raised to a new life with new power. And that power included the ability and the right to raise all the dead. Of course, Jesus raised the dead, and his most famous raising was that of Lazarus. And in that raising, Jesus made a statement about the resurrection. I want to focus on that statement that he made in the resurrection, because it's an important one in helping us to remember how that resurrection impacted Jesus and how he viewed it. Remember, Lazarus had died. Mary and Martha, his close friends, this is soon after, or soon before, he's to go to Jerusalem to be crucified. Mary and Martha come to him and tell him, you know, that Lazarus is sick, and later they come and tell him Lazarus had died, and if you were here, he wouldn't have died. Would you have the nerve to tell Jesus that? Well, that's a woman for you, right? No, I think more important than that. It shows the close and intimate relationship Jesus had with that family of Mary and Martha and Lazarus, that they could talk to him, as Tom Gilbert said this morning, just as God talked to Abraham and Noah as a friend. Think about it. Jesus had few real true friends, but three of those friends were Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And that's why she said, "Your friend Lazarus has died." I would be loved to be called a friend of Jesus. Of course, we are brethren of Jesus, but in that day, it was a very special relationship. So Jesus responded to Martha when she said this, "If you'd been here, you know, our brother would not have died." John 11, 25 and 26, he says, Jesus said unto her, "Martha, I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die. Believest thou this?" Of course, this scripture has been great speculation, and even amongst many Christians, that introduces the concept that, well, if you believe in Jesus, you're never going to die. You may pass on to something else, but there's nothing, you know, you will continue, and that's why they're urged to be saved. But if we investigate this scripture a little closer, we'll see this is not what Jesus is saying. If we go to the Rotherham translation of verse 26, Rotherham translates this verse this way. It has a footnote on it even. He says, "And no one who liveth again and believeth on me shall in any wise die unto time's age abiding." Rotherham, notice, gives the thought about someone living again and believing in Jesus. They wouldn't die. Time's age abiding is that ages of ages, that period of time that comes after the resurrection. So rightly understood, Jesus is giving a preview of what happens when someone accepts and believes in him, not today. But he incorporates both ideas. No one who lives and believes in me, and no one who lives again and believes in me. We have this pictured in other